Have you, you've seen a lot in your lifetime. What would you say about these times right now?
Kathy, as a tall, dark, handsome, big black man
with a great and voice. Boy, you got a great radio that, voice
that have always lived on the edge of careful in America. Mm-hmm. I am most stressed about the situation that we have evolved back into. Mm-hmm. We are so close to the fears and apprehensions of Jim Crow all over again in my community. You know, I have two tall, dark, handsome, big boys, mm-hmm. and they're 35 and 37. And I have to continue to remind them, to remind their friends and acquaintances this, that the world is changing around us, mm-hmm. but all around us, because I really want my boys to come back home alive. And that struggle is real in our community.
Yeah.
This is not recreation. So the threat to the Capitol is something that we've been living under all our lives. But now it is more intensified.
Yeah. You know, part of my professional background, I worked in the Washington, D.C. area, and I worked for Merck at that time. And my hiring manager was African-American male, my second manager, African-American male, many of my colleagues. And, you know, when the whole controversy, when O.J. Simpson and that Bronco, mm-hmm. you know, was happening, sure. and we had a team meeting, and obviously there was a topic of conversation, and the men that I worked with, and they were my friends, you know, they were really upset about certain aspects of how he was treated. Mm-hmm. And I was, of course, like, but I, you know, I think he did something wrong. So we had this conversation, and one of my closest associates, another African male, he was the man that we had the same territory. So we yes. worked together mm-hmm. in the same sales territory. And he described to me, he said, I get stopped by the police in my own neighborhood asking me what I'm doing there. And honestly, it was a huge eye-opener for me. I was like, I had no idea. That was in 1993, 94.
Oh, yes.
So I think, you know, there's a way that we have to obviously get better, you know, in talking with each other sure. and understanding what's going on. And it's so disturbing in our own community to see people a part of this group that actually tried to, you know, tried to overthrow an election, you yes. know, on January 6th, disrupting the school board meeting.
Yes.
Like, I thought, you know, I was naive. I thought that we were past certain things, but obviously it's coming up to be cleaned and looked at, and I hope that we can really do some better work, you know,
yeah.
in this community, in this country.
We must. We, you know, to hold this community together, it's going to require a lot more love. It is so dangerous out there right now that people are really checking themselves. When I talk to women, they are really checking themselves. And you know, kids, you know, I also do some substitute teaching around the county. And I was at Booker Middle School the last week, right after the mass killing and shooting in Texas. And
yeah.
and they had a lockdown drill. And I was in a classroom, and they started a lockdown drill, and, you know, you lock all the doors, make sure the light's out, and you go to a safe place. We went to our safe place, and the kids that was in the classroom, we were in a corridor between two classrooms, right in the area where the bathrooms are. Some of the kids got so frightened that they said, hey, I'm going into the bathroom. Out here is not safe enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing outside, and there's a door in between the corridors from the classrooms from each side. And I'm holding the handle on the door just to show them that, hey, we have to be serious about this process. And they went into the bathroom and was quiet. Mm-hmm. And to have a lockdown drill or a shooting drill a couple of days after a mass shooting is a shame. I feel like my days when we was holding our heads waiting for the atomic bomb to be dropped in Newtown.
We did that when I was in ninth. I was nine. So it was the Cold War. And I just remember standing in the hall with my hands over my head outside my fourth grade classroom going, what good's this going to do? Like, if there's a nuclear attack.
To realize that is amazing.
Yeah. You know,
It took me a couple times to do that before I said, if they drop an atomic bomb in Tampa at MacDill Air Force Base, we gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But to your point, you know, we're moving into a time. I had interviewed the author. I'm going to put this on YouTube. I haven't done it yet, but it's a fabulous author, Sarah Chase. She's written on corruption in America. And she talks about this notion of freedom, which basically is there's no responsibility to other people involved. It's I get to do what I want. That's what freedom is. And for freedom to work in a society, your freedom has to matter too, right? My freedom and your freedom.
Yes.
There has to be this mutual regard. So it's great that you substitute teach, and but the impact on children, I don't think we can know what it's like for them to be growing up with this tension. And if the adults in the community are actually perpetuating it, and that's what I see in our politics, even in our local politics, is that this stuff is being used, gender issues, like at the school board. There are children and families who are navigating these issues, right?
Oh, yes.
And shouldn't compassion be the rule of the day? You know, we're not all going to agree on everything, but can we be kind? And the bullying and the inflammatory rhetoric, like the anti-CRT. So I want to ask you about that. You know, like, what is it like, and what's your thought on, even at the state level, the Stop Woke Act, the Don't Say Gay, as a leader in a minority community, what are your thoughts in terms of actual legislation that's being passed?
Say, I referred to as earlier, we are truly going back to reenacting Jim Crow. But Jim is now becoming Jane, and it's not necessarily a crow, it's a robin or a blue jay, because it's hitting on all of the society groups around this county and around this country. Because it's so amazing that the rights of the people are getting restricted by the few ultra-conservative opinions of those persons that are in charge. And that's the struggle that we are in. And so the people have to understand that the way that we determine who tells us what to do is who we allow to get elected. And so we got to exercise our only power in this process is to vote, and vote in every election, and encourage everybody else you know to vote that has your opinion.
Yeah. You know, because I ran as an independent in 2010 for the county commission, and the incumbent was running unopposed, and that happened a lot.
Yes.
Actually, we've had 50 years of one party in
rule.
Right, in Sarasota County government. And I thought, well, gosh, you know, I'm concerned. I'm going to run. I learned a lot. But one of the things I learned, you know, one of my volunteers was outside the Venice polling precinct. I forget which one. But he was doing some exit polling, and he asked people, who'd you vote for county commission? And most people said, I don't know. And then he said, well, did you vote for John Thaxton? And they said, yeah. I voted for John Thaxton. John Thaxton has great name recognition, mm-hmm. and he was a county commissioner at the mm-hmm. time. And John Thaxton was not on the ballot. So, what I learned was, wow, there's such a deficit of information. And I'd give these talks about mainly the dark money talks, but I would ask people in the audience, how many of you can name your five county commissioners? Mm-hmm. And in a room of 100 people, it was like two or three hands would go up. And boy, these races are important. They, school board races, county commission races, do they have an impact on your quality of life? So, I mean, what would you do if you're elected, or what is your goal to make that connection stronger with the voter, you know, or in your campaign? How are you going to help people? I think we're further than we were in 2010, but I think mm-hmm. we still have a long way to go.
In my campaign, I am working every small crowd, large crowd, every possible grouping I can get to mm-hmm. to introduce myself to some and to basically maintain a relationship with others. That's so vitally important, and to help them understand that we need to understand what is required to maintain our government in a way that we want it to do. Mm-hmm. But I also, I'm using social media in every possible way I can. I'm trying to reach the young in the Twitters and the TikTok. I'm trying to reach the olds on the Facebook. Mm-hmm. I want people.
Oh, you're killing me. You said old people are on Facebook. I know that's true. At least the young people go, oh, that's where my mom is.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah. So that's
the reality.
Yeah.
They have evolved. Uh-huh. We just arrived.
They're on Instagram, TikTok. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So that's where we are, and it's going to be an amazing process to introduce government to young people, because it's not happening at schools in a way, because they've basically taken civics in reality out of schools and directed it in a way that is so vanilla that kids not getting the real understanding of what their powers are. We are not teaching young people that they have power without mm-hmm. money. Mm-hmm. And that's what we got to do. We got to understand that community is more important than an individual. And that's what we got to teach.
Yeah, I think that collectively, though, on a national level, that what happened, you know, we are an inflection point in the country. We've got very serious hearings happening with January 6th. I take your point about civic education. I mean, I was reading the other day, it took the New York Times 1 year to actually call January 6th an attempted coup. And that's what it was.
Yes.
You know, that's really what it was. So I think we've become, as a country and locally, with this lack of awareness of who our representatives are, which I think is getting better, but there's still a long way to go, we've become complacent about this belief that this government's always going to be here the way it is, and we don't have to protect it, when reality is citizenship requires activity and engagement and yes. you know, supporting candidates. If you don't do it, there are people who will benefit from these decisions who are happy to step in and run the show. And they have. They absolutely have.
Yes.
The money in politics is one of the core issues, I think. What do you hear when you go out and talk to voters about their concerns at the county level? What are they asking you?
And they are the basic tenets of most elections. It's the environment. It's mm-hmm. growth. It's how we are going to deal with the civility at the county commission. How we are going to address attainable housing and those issues. Those are the four tenets of this election. Mm-hmm. But it is so much more serious than that, because for us to be able to address those things, we got to have a fair discussion at the county commission. Mm-hmm. And so I encourage people to not only look at my election, but look at my process, look at the history of Fred Atkins and my participation, and understand that fredatkins.com is a public site that I want you to come and look at me. I want you to help me, because we need all the help we can get, because we are fighting against, in our primary, we are fighting against the cabal that basically had $50,000 in one candidate pocket before he even said he was running. And the other opponent of mine.
Talking about Mr. Brody?
Yes. Okay. And we also talking about my other opponent. He put $35,000 in his chest, in his campaign coffers for recreation, but he's running around acting like he's a poor candidate. Ladies and gentlemen, I am the disenfranchised candidate in this process, but I'm the one that could represent us the best. And so I want you to really take a look at who we are and decide who you want to represent us. And I think that if you really do, I will be your choice.
Well, I am going to ask you back to have, I'm sure, you know, WSLR will be sponsoring a forum for, because you have two Democratic opponents.
Yes.
You are, which I have to say is a huge positive development, right? That we have choices, people with experience, people who have demonstrated an interest in county government. And used to be, like I said, people just ran unopposed.
Yeah.
So will you come back and we'll have a forum and they'll get to respond to, you know,
what
you have to say.
Most certainly will.
Okay.
Be more than happy to.
Okay. Well, Fred Atkins, you know, one last thing. We don't have enough time, but I want to give you, we do have a few minutes. And affordable, you enunciated these affordable housing and the environment, growth. Can you speak to affordable housing a bit and share what your thoughts are for your district and for the county at large? What do we need to be doing better? We're in a fix, aren't we?
Yes, Kathy. We are in dire straits. We cannot and have not realized how important it was to hold back developers to the extent that we create opportunities for workers to live here. Mm. So developers have dictated the prices of properties, and now we are in a situation where people that come to work here have to come from St. Petersburg and Ellington and Norport and Charlotte County.
Yeah.
And so that's our greatest crisis. But what I do celebrate is that the discussion has evolved to the point that I led it to, and it's not affordable housing anymore.
Okay.
It's attainable housing. Attainable means that you can purchase or rent a home based on your income. Because if you define affordable, people that make $500,000 can afford a lot more than somebody that's making $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so the definition now for what we are trying to get is attainable housing. And what I think is most important is I have a history of developing and generating those processes in the city of Sarasota, from not-for-profits to basically the city creating land banks, developing basically overlay districts so that we can generate housing. We also have been able to take persons in public housing and develop more quality standard of living public housing. Just finished one complex on Emerald Avenue, replacing some of the old Orange Avenue projects, and now they are working on the second one. But Sarasota County is in such a dire straits that we can attract some of the larger not-for-profit and low-income housing developers that are willing to develop housing for working-class people. They are not out here to try to gouge the community and take advantage of the people. So there are opportunities out there, but we got to take inclusionary zoning and use that to our best advantage, even when the governor and the state legislature try to make that so difficult for the cities and counties to do that. It's just taking advantage and supporting the people that have never done the right thing in the past. They just wanted to make money.
We're gonna have you back with your colleagues who are also vying for District 2. We will invite them and have a full panel. Thank you so much, everyone. My guest has been Fred Atkins. He is a candidate for County Commission District 2. And you have been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5, LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1, LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. And you know, August 23rd is election day for the Sarasota County School Board, Manatee County School Boards, and it's primary day for important races like County Commission.
FredAtkins.com.
Yeah. So, be sure to, they can find out more about your candidacy
on FredAtkins.com.
Go to SarasotaVotes.com and VoteManatee.com to update your registration, to make sure it's correct, to find out your precinct, to make a plan to vote. I want to thank you all for listening. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.